After another couple of miles of deserted gridwork streets and sprawling ruination, Ryan and his companions came to the intersection of two main roads. Ryan led them over swampy, trash-littered former backyards and between cinder block foundations filled with stagnant black water around to the west side of the mall. From this angle, they could see that almost all of the complex's connecting interior corridors and colonnades had collapsed in on themselves. A single big-box store was still standing.
Okay, stop here. That's Boom T's place.
The entrance to the three-story building was shielded by a pair of Winnebagos sitting on their rusting wheel rims. A mob of people waited in the heat to pass single file through the gap between the RVs. Some wore heavy backpacks, some stowed their trade goods in homemade wags and dog carts. Those were the small-timers. There was a separate queue for big-time traders. A lineup of horse-drawn carts, motorcycles, pack mules, and tethered human bearers at the back bumper of the Winnebago on the right, along the building's windowless facade. Everybody stood under the watch of crude gun towers at the corners of the roof. Christie scanned the setup through mini-binocs.
How does the operation work?
Small-timers are dealt with by Boom T's SecMen. Before they get to go into the building, the SecMen put a value on their trade goods. The customers get a chit, which they can use for any of the goods inside up to the amount of the chit. Inside, there's a drop-off area for newly bartered stuff. Folks find what they're after and hand back the chit. The exit's on the south end of the building. Can't see it from here.
Christie passed over the binocs to Mildred.
Who's the fat man coming out of the Winnie on the right? He's as big as a sumo wrestler, and it looks like he's wearing a chenille bedspread. Good God, look at that flab.
That would be Boom T in the flesh. He handles the major trades and shipping deals himself.
What are those pinkish blotches on his arms and back? Some kind of skin problem?
Yeah, from bullets. Those are wound scars. Definitely a hard man to chill.
A lot of folks have tried to put Boom T in the ground. He's put them all there instead. It's the flab that protects him. I don't know the muscle underneath. He's one powerful son of a bitch. He's a lot faster than he looks. Rumor has it he can snap a grown man's neck with either hand.
Need a dead center hit with an RPG to take out that giant tub of guts.
Boom T opened up shop about 15 years ago, after Scrounger started going into the hot zones to the north and west to look for spoils.
By spoils, I take it you are referring to undiscovered caches of pre-dark manufactured goods?
Correct.
Trader never trusted Boom T.
With reason. Big boy over there is a double-dealing, backstabbing mountain of crap. And we don't have enough ammo left to defend our booty. If we take more spoils with us than we're willing to lose, chances are we'll lose everything and get ourselves chilled in the bargain.
So we've got to hide most of the C4? Where?
I know a good place farther south. Come on, let's go.
Circling wide around the south end of the mall, through the shimmering waves of heat, they could see a pair of four-mule carts crawling for the line of moored sailboats at the water's edge. The heavily laden wags rolled on scavenged auto axles and wheels down the cracked and granularized street. Between the mall and the distant water was a wide expanse of rolling, undeveloped land. There were stands of mature trees, some bare-limbed and dead, some living. Among the twists and turns of the landscape stood patches of irrigated fields that were bordered by little clusters of fieldhand shanties. Mildred realized it was once a golf course, but kept that bit of freezy trivia to herself. Ryan led the companions across the mule cart route and onto what had once been a lush and rolling green. The farm fields on either side weren't fenced. No field hands were in evidence. With the sun straight overhead, it was too hot to do grunt work. No heads appeared in the doorless doorways or glassless windows of the huts either. If the laborers were inside, they were dozing soundly through the suffocating heat. The companions climbed a shallow grade, then passed through a stand of tall trees. In a shallow bowl below, out of sight of the surrounding fields, was a water hazard that had once challenged golfers. The small lake's surface was choked with mats of chartreuse algae. Ryan led the companions down to the shore, then handed JB his scoped rifle.
Leave your C4 here and head up to the ridge on the far side of the lake. Make sure no one is spying on us from that direction.
As JB trotted away, Ryan dumped his part of the C4 on the bank. Christie eyed the slimy water pit.
We're hiding explosives in the water?
It won't hurt the C4. It's sealed in plastic. Everybody take out one detonator blister pack.
The companions unshouldered their loads and did as he asked.
Put the batteries in your detonators, and then try the test button.
The companions followed Ryan's instructions. all of the remotes lit up. Green for go. They were functional. Ryan pried the two tiny power cells from the black plastic case and slipped each of them into a different pants pocket.
Okay, now remove the batteries. Hide them in your gear, separate from the detonators. We don't want some drooler arming one of the remotes and pushing the fire button by accident.
As Doc pocketed his depowered detonator, he shook his head.
Batteries in, batteries out. Dear Ryan, I must admit to puzzlement. For the life of me, I cannot fathom your intent.
I'm just buying us some getaway insurance.
With the point of his panga, Ryan carefully slit the plastic on one of the bricks along a lengthwise seam. Using the components from a blister pack, he quickly rigged the 2-kilo block of plastique for remote detonation. Then he pressed close the slit he had made in the plastic wrap. Because it stuck to the explosive material, the incision was almost undetectable. He repacked the backpack with 10 parcels of C4, putting the rigged brick near the bottom.
Now any of us can detonate the entire load if the shit hits the fan.
We better all be a long ways off when that happens. 12 kilos of plastique is gonna raise some dust.
But Ryan, anybody else can set it off too. Why did you leave the detonators and batteries in the load we're going to trade?
Had no choice, Christy. For all we know, Boomty's expecting this C4 to show up. He could have contracted the dead scroungers to bring it to him from New Mex. And if he did, he could know there were supposed to be remote detonators included in the deal. If the detonators are missing when we show him the goods, you can bet the farm he'll have his sec men search us. When they find what they're looking for, it'll take the play away from us. If the detonators are in the mix, Boomty isn't going to dig deeper, and we've still got our hole card.
So we show up with the C4 instead of the traitors he contracted with? How's that going to go down?
Boomty won't care who makes the delivery or who he pays for the C4. He sure as hell isn't going to care what happened to the scroungers. That's the kind of shitsnake he is.
But it is possible that he was expecting the arrival of all 6 backpacks.
In that case, Doc, he'll be happy that one actually showed up. We've got a believable story. His pet scroungers were chilled by stickies. We salvaged a single load. Hell, it's almost even true.
Ryan sat on the grass, untied his boots, and kicked them off.
No sense in more than 2 of us getting wet. Jack, gather up a couple of backpacks of C4 and wait out with me.
Leaving his own pack on the bank, Ryan hoisted 3 others and moved slowly into the warm water, careful to tear the smallest possible rip in the algae mat. Jack kicked off his boots, grabbed up the remaining un-booby-trapped packs, and waded out to mid-thigh. The two of them sank the packs under the water, holding them down until all the trapped air bubbles escaped. As they backtracked their path to the shore, they brushed together the torn edges of the bloom. Ryan and Jack carefully dried their feet on the grass before putting on their boots. When Ryan stood, he waved for JB to hurry down from the lookout. Doc still looked perplexed.
I am still rather at a loss here. What exactly is your larger strategy?
If we can get cartridges and gas in trade for the one load of C4, we can lug the fuel and the sunken explosives back to the bikes and ride on east to Louisiana in style. If we can't get gas, we'll have to find transport by water or keep walking. If things go sour with Boom T and we have enough of a head start, we can come back here and recover the rest of the C4. If not, we can leave it where it is for now and come back later.
After JB rejoined them, Ryan retrieved the Steyr and shouldered the last backpack of explosives.
Let's go cut ourselves a deal.
They returned to the mall, retracing their circuitous route to approach it from the north. An extra but necessary precaution. If things went badly, Boom T and crew wouldn't think to look south for any spoils they had hidden. As the companions stepped onto the sun-baked parking lot, the dried mud broke under their boots like layers of crisp pastry dough, each step sending up a little puff of fine brown dust. Keeping the edge of the mall's acres of mounded rubble on their left, they headed for the big box store. As Ryan got closer, he could see that a side entrance to the mall's interior and its covered walkway were still intact and connected to the north wall of Boom T's Emporium. The interior hallway and roof were supported on the opposite side by the facades of gutted storefronts. Ryan led the others wide right of the doorless opening, giving them some room to maneuver if need be.
Forget about the fat man, boys. Mama's got what you need.
Just inside the shade of the corridor on the left, a bevy of road-hard and hefty, gaudy sluts reclined on tubular aluminum chaise longues. Barefoot, in carelessly belted ratty nylon housecoats, they sat splay-legged, showing off their wares and airing them at the same time. There were no takers among the handful of scroungers loitering on the other side of the partially collapsed hallway. Privately, Ryan thought that there wasn't enough air in the world to make that appetizing. As he led the others past the rear of the mob of small-timer scroungers, still waiting to pass through the gap between the cadaverous 120-year-old Winnebagoes, he could feel the gun sights up in the guard towers tracking their every step. The big-time queue had shortened considerably while they were gone. There was only one group of traders ahead of them now. Five men bearing heavy backpacks awaited the judgment of the proprietor. Boom T sat in a canopied golf cart, out of sniper sight in the lee of the southernmost Winnebago's bow. Clipped to the underside of the canopy's frame were a pair of Comblock RPGs, their plastic pistol grips in easy reach. If anything, the man was bigger than Ryan remembered. His 500-pound, 6-foot-8-inch bulk took up the entire bench seat. Rolls upon rolls of pendulous, sweating flab hung from his chest. Close up, the gunshot scars on his torso and arms were clearly of varying calibers. Waxy divots ranging from .380 auto to 7.62mm NATO. A mountainous wedge of shoulders and neck peaked at a head shaved to black stubble. Long wisps of beard hair trailed from his sloping cheeks. Instead of shoes or boots, he wore homemade sandals of tire tread. Boots his size were hard to come by. To protect his eyes from the sun and to conceal the focus of his attention, Boom T wore raspberry mirror-lensed wraparound sunglasses. He impatiently waved his segment forward to uncover the next batch of goods on offer. As he did so, he tossed a pale, slender rib bone onto the pile of other bones on the ground beside him. From the size of the heap, it looked like he'd already eaten 8 or 9 of whatever the species was. He licked his fingers one by one and daintily wiped them on the edge of the bedspread he was wearing. The sec men shoulder-slung their full-stock AKMs, opened the tops of the trader's overloaded packs, and pulled out fistfuls of assorted pre-dark fasteners. It was all salvaged, nail by nail, screw by screw. It had to be. Screws and nails were no longer manufactured or imported. Without metal fasteners, building or repair of large structures was difficult, if not impossible. Without those once taken for granted items, folks were forced to live in tents, lean-tos, stone or log huts, or caves. One of the segmen approached his boss and held out the sample for examination. With a fingertip, Boom T casually flicked out a few badly rusted bent nails and stripped slot screws.
Looks like 30% is useless shit. All right, listen up, you sorry sons of bitches. There are rocks in your packs. I'm going to use them to sink you to the bottom of the bay. That understood?
Yes, sir.
Boom T wrote out a chit and handed the scrap of paper to the sec man.
Don't give them this until you make sure there are no rocks.
The fat man shifted on the bench seat to take in the next trader in line. When he saw who was standing there, his mouth dropped open. He pushed his sunglasses down the bridge of his nose and squinted through slits for eyelids.
As I live and breathe, it is one-eyed Carter. Oh, and fuck me triple. If it ain't the glasses peering, fedora wearing pipsqueak, too. Oh, well, you brought your own sluts along, I see. Hey there, redhead chocolate mama. That's good thinking, Carter. Whores in these parts are scab-assed and wide-reamed. Still can't attract no decent help around here.
They're not slots, they're fighters.
Oh, yeah, okay, whatever you say, wanna.
Boom T winked at Mildred, theatrically adjusted his crotch beneath the bedspread, and blew her a kiss.
So did you hear the news about Deathland's famous traitor? What has it your old running buddy croaked but ugly? Sitting in a pile of his own dung, squalling for his mammy. I guess what goes around comes around. You know, it's righteous payback for that extra special evil he did at Virtue Lake. All them mamas and papas and them helpless little kittywitties chilled like goldfish down a hole. Yeah, You were at Virtue Lake right by his side, as I remember the story. Yeah, maybe Hall Justice about to bite you in your ass, too? Huh? You got nothing to say on the subject, Mr. One-Eye?
Ryan let his lips twitch into a faint, cold smile. He unslung the backpack, took out a golden, plastic-wrapped brick, and underhand tossed it over to Boom T.
We've got 10 kilos of that. What do you give us for it?
Boom T's piggy eyes widened, and he ran his fingers over the C4 like it was a freshly roasted leg of lamb. He brought it to his nose.
If this shit really goes bang, you can have whatever the fuck you want.
After glancing at the attached blister pack, he chucked the parcel back to Ryan.
What I want first, though, is a demo blast with that remote detonator.
You got it.
Trying to read the fat man's face was like trying to read a 70-pound suet pudding. Although Boom T's eyes had lit up when he recognized the explosive, Ryan decided that didn't prove he had been expecting it. He also realized that he had a bigger problem. The radio signal trigger was indiscriminate. It was universal. Using it to fire a demonstration blasting cap would also set off the cap stuck in the booby-trapped brick in the bottom of the backpack, which would set off the plastique at their feet and turn them all from solid flesh and bone to glistening pink vapor faster than a person could blink. As Ryan set to work preparing the test charge, Christy, Mildred, Doc, JB, and Jack hunkered down in the skinny strip of shade cast by the Winnie. After Ryan rigged a golf ball-sized clump of C4 with a blasting cap and radio-controlled initiator, he carried the wad of Plas-X a safe distance to the middle of the parking lot, set it down, then walked back. In front of Boom T, he pretended to put in both of the detonator's batteries, but expertly palmed them instead. Three-card Monty. Ryan flipped off the detonator's safety and tried the test circuit. Of course, the little green indicator light didn't go on.
It doesn't light up. Maybe the bulb's burned out. I'll try the blast switch. Fire in the hole!
The sec men, traitors, and companions took cover. But when Ryan hit the switch, nothing happened.
I guess the nuking thing doesn't work. Probably none of the detonators work. That's the brakes.
Yeah. I guess you're shit out of luck then.
Nah, there's still the detonator cord. That's the sure way to test the C4, and there's plenty of extra cord and blasting caps to blow up the rest of it.
He used his ponga to cut off a yard length of the white braid and recrossed the parking lot. After removing the radio initiator, he crimped the blasting cap to the cord and set the safety fuse alight with a wooden match. This time he hot-footed it back to the RV.
Better duck and cover.
Flying shards of dried mud showered the far side of the Winnie and peppered the wall of the box door, turning to puffs of dust on impact. As the echoes faded, in the middle of the parking lot, a cloud of pale dirt mixed with smoke climbed into the sky.
So, do we have a trade, Boom T?
You be looking for what?
Ammo for our blasters, traveling rations, stuff we can carry.
Go on inside and help yourself.
The fat man scribbled out a chit and gave it to Ryan. He waved for a sec man to take charge of the backpack.
Put that someplace safe.
As Boom T slipped his raspberry shades back on, Ryan turned with the companions toward the store's entrance.
Wait a minute now, One-Eye. I want that bum detonator, too.
Ryan shrugged as if he couldn't imagine why Boom T would want the useless piece of junk.
Forgot about it.
He handed over the detonator, and then he and his friends fell in line behind the sec man carrying the C4. Behind them were two AK-armed escorts. Ryan still didn't know for sure, but it didn't appear that Boom T had any advance warning about the shipment of explosives. Sooner or later, however, the fat man was going to open the detonator case and find no batteries inside. Suspicious by nature, it would immediately occur to him that he'd been somehow, some way, flim-flammed. It was likely that, to confirm that, his first act would be to power up the bum detonator and test it for himself. The companions needed to be miles gone when that happened. The plate glass in the box store's entry doors had been replaced by sheets of split and delaminating plywood. Just inside the entrance, four assault rifle-armed sec men stood guard behind a hardened blaster post, keeping shoppers from trying to use it as an exit. Traffic flowed one way in and one way out. it was at least 10 degrees cooler than outside. The place was much as Ryan remembered it from his days with Prater. Above a wide expanse of gutted floor space, the drop ceiling had long since fallen away, exposing overhead wiring, heating ducts, and drooping wads of water-stained insulation. The smell was particularly hard to forget, a combination of smoke from the torches and candelabra that lit the windowless showroom and moldy funk. Dirt-encrusted footpaths crisscrossed the gray sheet flooring, winding through an indoor junkyard. Loot pillaged from the far corners of the hellscape was piled in heaps and in neat rows. Crudely lettered signs hung from the ceiling, indicating at a distance what kind of goods were on offer in the area beneath. Mildred shook her head.
Ugh, Costco. Post-apocalypse. There's even music. Pre-dark music to shop by.
They followed the sec man carrying the C4 backpack to a screened-in enclosure on the left. Boom T kept his extra special spoils stacked behind floor-to-ceiling hurricane fence, reinforced by steel pipe. A guard sitting inside on a disintegrating couch with a machine pistol on his lap had to get up and unlock the cage. With a sinking feeling in his gut, Ryan watched the C4 change hands. The die was cast. They couldn't very well demand to examine the pack they just traded and then disarm the brick in front of witnesses. Revealing the booby trap would surely get them killed. Ditto for starting a gun battle inside the store to recover the goods. They didn't have enough ammo for that. After the cage door shut, the three-man escort left them to their shopping. Christy leaned closer to Ryan.
Are we nuked or what?
Not nuked yet. This is just another case of hit and get. Find what we need, make tracks.
Munitions are over that way.
JB walked toward them, waving the others after him as he set off. Under the guns and ammo sign was a warped sheet of presswood laid across a pair of sawhorses. Lined up on the makeshift table were a selection of firearms on offer. The weapons of pre-dark vintage all had barrels orange with rust, mostly single-shot, exposed hammer shotguns, with cracked or missing butt and forestocks. Baling wire appeared to be the repair material of choice. Ryan scowled at the rows of newly manufactured pistols. The grips had been scroll-sawed from 1-inch plywood. Pairs of stainless steel screw clamps held foot-long barrels to the stocks. The barrels were made of plumbing pipe, roughly 10 gauge in bore. There was no safety and no trigger on the single-shot black powder weapons. They were fired by a drawback thumb device based on a rat-trap spring that drove a nail point into an exposed percussion cap. They were much more likely to kill the shooter than the target. JB frowned in disgust.
The gunsmith should be hanged if he hadn't been already.
The other companions hunkered down and started going through plastic bins of loose live centerfire ammo of various standard calibers. Jack pried a shell from his Python cylinder and tried to chamber one of Boom T's 357 mag rounds. It didn't fit. JB reached for the bullet.
Let me see it, Jack.
The armorer thumbed his spectacles back up the bridge of his nose and closely examined the cartridge.
This case has been reloaded one too many times. There's a hairline crack around the rim. The reason you can't chamber it is that the triple stoop who reloaded it did such a crap job of prepping the case.
Whipping out a scarred toolkit, JB used pliers to unseat the bullet from the brass. He dumped the gunpowder onto his palm.
This isn't even smokeless. It's black powder. This ammo's junk, Ryan. There's no decent reloads in the lot. No point in rummaging through it. Even the rounds that'll chamber and might be safe to fire are gonna be nuke shit for knockdown power.
Forget it, then. We've gotta move on. We can still trade for fuel and come out ahead.
They hurried away from the ammo station, weaving around rows of knives, hatches, spears and crossbows made from salvaged leaf springs, past heaps of blankets and clothes folks had certainly died in, even if they weren't killed for them. Three male shoppers stood buck naked, showing off their farmer tans, while they tried on previously owned sleepwear. Other shoppers sat on the floor, testing battered shoes and boots for a good fit. There were tiers of assorted plastic coolers, piles of moldy tents and sleeping bags, and cardboard boxes of junk jewelry, eyeglasses, and prescription drugs, a century past throwaway dates. The companions skirted Boomty's fresh produce section, then the butcher shop. Slabs of raw meat lay in plastic tubs, unrefrigerated, on the floor. The flesh wasn't labeled as to species or cut. It looked like chicken, but it smelled more like fish. The rear of the shop was hidden behind a floral print bedsheet strung from the ceiling's exposed heating ducts. The curtain was thin, and a man, apparently the butcher, was dimly visible through it. Mildred took a step closer to Ryan, casually pretending interest in a tub of jointed bones from some critter or other.
Did you notice we picked up a shadow?
Yeah, I marked him.
A big man with a handlebar mustache had been dogging them around the store, edging closer and closer as if trying to overhear their conversation. The companions kept moving, heading to the gas area. The Emporium's fuel station was a section of floor space covered by a variety of translucent containers of all types and sizes with airtight screw tops. JB unscrewed a lid from a glass jug.
Oh, wow. That's nasty.
Before JB could get his eyes to stop watering, the mustached man sidled closer.
You don't want none of that. Boom T waters down his gas.
Ryan took in the deep tan, weather-seamed gray eyes, gnarled, scarred hands, and the densely muscled arms and shoulders, and decided that the man wasn't nearly as old as he looked at first glance. A life of brutal work and privation had prematurely aged him. There was a light in his eyes that Ryan recognized, a young man's light. On one hip, he had a harmonica in a holster. On the other, he had a massive stainless steel .45 ACP revolver, a Smith & Wesson Model 625, and a beat-up canvas holster low in his right hip.
Some folks say the fat man pees in it for fun. Whether it's stretched with water or piss, it's no more than 70 octane. Won't get you far. And it'll wreck your engines for sure.
JB nodded to Ryan as he screwed back the cap.
He's right. It's all crap.
You want the good stuff, you need to see Boom T's private stock. Top quality stuff he hides away for himself. He's got a treasure vault down in the basement for the best merchandise. If you go back and complain to him, there's a slight chance he might let you shop there. But since he's already got your goods, he'll probably tell you to take it or leave it. You folks should really be dealing with me.
What do you mean? The deal is done.
Before the man could respond, Jack nudged Ryan with an elbow and pointed toward the security cage's open gate. A sec man was walking out with a brick of their C4 in his hand.
Oh, shit.
Breaking into a trot, Ryan and the others managed to cut the guy off before he reached the Winnebago exit. On closer inspection, Ryan could see that the sec man had the brick that he had opened in front of Boom T and taken the test wad from.
Say, where are you going with that?
Old Boom T found some batteries. He got that detonator's test light to go on. Come on out and watch. It should be extra good. He's gonna make himself a swimming pool.
Boom T sat in the shade of his golf cart's red-striped canopy, eating a whole cold roast chicken barehanded, like an ear of corn. 15 feet away, under the baking sun, a quartet of indentured servants swung pickaxes high overhead, slamming them into the ground. They had cracked a seam in the asphalt and were burrowing into the concrete-like compacted clay beneath. The going got easier once they broke through the bottom of the layer of hardpan. They tossed aside the axes, picked up long-handled shovels, and resumed work, digging a deep, narrow hole. A half dozen of Boom T's sec men stood around their gargantuan leader with shouldered assault rifles, telescopic sights sweeping the flatland of vacant streets and exposed foundations for potential threats. Because Boom T was unsure of the consequences when a full kilo of C4 was detonated, he had decided to err on the side of caution. He sighted his experiment as far as possible from the Emporium so it wouldn't be accidentally damaged, either in the initial blast or by the debris fall. That meant the swimming pool excavation was going to be much closer to the outside edge of the parking lot than he had originally envisioned. Boom T spit a mouthful of chicken bones over his left shoulder onto the ground. Rotating the slippery carcass, he attacked the breast and thigh on the opposite side. Even One Eye trying to cheat him by stealing the batteries couldn't dent his ebullient mood. What was the point of having a large quantity of high explosive if you didn't use part of it to blow something up? He had considered blowing up One Eye, Pipsqueak, and the two other male members of his crew along with the parking lot, but after weighing the risk and benefit, he thought better of it. There were better ways. By now, One Eye had already scoped out the shabby quality of the box store merchandise. He would demand better for his trade, which meant taking him and his crew down to the private showroom, where they could be more easily overpowered and disarmed. Boom T had decided to remove the man's remaining eye with a soup spoon, and then turn him loose in the hellscape, helpless and as blind as a bat. Pipsqueak, on the other hand, was gonna die hard. For Boom T, it had been hate at first sight, years ago. Hated his stupid hat, hated his squinting four eyes, hated his ankle-biting stature, hated his weapons know-how. Hated most of all the fact that, way back when, he couldn't get him to turn against Traitor. Something that cost the man plenty jack. Of all the ways of killing at the overweight entrepreneur's disposal, the biggest crowd pleaser was death by backside, because it was so painful and prolonged, and at the same time, so rad-blasted comical. Boom T simply positioned himself over a spread-eagled helpless victim, and with his full body weight, sat down. With judicious over-the-shoulder aim, he could break every bone and rupture every organ. Pipsqueak was going to end up a pancake, squashed like the nearsighted little bug he was. For all Boom T cared, his sec man could use the albino and the geezer for target practice. They preferred shooting at something alive. After an interval of time working under and over Boom T, One Eye's tasty sluts would be consigned to the gaudy shop. Scroungers, male and female, would be lined up from here to Groves to have a go at those two. Pay a nukin' premium, too. Boom T eyed the pit's progress. Committing an entire kilo of C4 to the swimming pool experiment was a crazy extravagance. Of that, there was no doubt. Essentially, it was blowing up a whole lot of jack, but Boom T was in the habit of indulging himself. The hole was finished by the time the sec man showed up with the C4. Boom T tossed away the stripped chicken carcass, wiped his fingertips on the bedspread, and set the brick on the seat beside him. He pushed his raspberry mirror shades on top of his head and opened the already torn plastic wrap. Boom T inserted the blasting cap and remote initiator into the side of the soft golden brick. The cart tipped alarmingly as Boom T slid off the seat. He waddled over to the hole and got down on his knees, dragging his baby blue toga in the dust. Then he lowered himself onto his enormous belly. To place the charge properly, he had to reach down the hole to his armpit, straining to touch bottom. When he rose up from the ground, parking lot dirt had mixed with the grease on his chins and chest. Oblivious to the grime he had accumulated, Boom T pulled down his mirror shades and climbed back into the cart.
All right, everyone follow me.
Driving the electric cart one-handed, he cut a quick 180-degree turn and bumped off the parking lot curb onto the wide, deserted avenue. He crossed the street, maneuvering around the wide cracks and potholes, and pulled up in a driveway. A rusting, burned-out semi-tractor and trailer lay overturned across the sidewalk. Boom T drove around behind the wreck and parked the cart. Boom T had always wanted to own a real swimming pool. One he could jump into to cool off. One he could float around in. With all his fat, he was virtually unsinkable. He imagined himself doing business while bobbing on his back. The golf course's lake was far too shallow for that, and it was always mucked up with slimy stuff. The water level fluctuated seasonally, too. A real swimming pool required steep, deep sides, like a blast crater. When the others were safely in the lee of the tipped-over semi-trailer, Boom T daintily wiped the grease from his fingers onto the bedspread's fringe. Then he took out the detonator.
Fire in your hole!
His sec man stuck fingers in their ears and hunkered down. The slaves did the same, hunkering even lower. Flipping off the device's safety, his eyes alight with glee, Boom T pressed the little red button. Ryan made no attempt to stop the sec man from exiting the building with the C4. The companions had already drawn the unwanted attention of the guard stationed inside the store's entrance. The one-eyed warrior glanced back at his people.
We need to move now, and we need to quick step. Don't run until we get outside.
Wait a minute!
The musician hustled after them as the companions headed for the doors at the south end of the store, trying to hurry without looking like they were hurrying. Their exodus drew some curious looks from other shoppers, but that couldn't be helped. Walking stride for stride alongside Ryan, the musician shot him a suspicious look.
Where are you going in such a rad-blasted hurry? You ain't taken out your trade yet. We got other business, more important business.
Ryan glanced at the man and could almost see the gears turning in his head. A bad detonator was now a good detonator. Now the pack of C4 was under lock and key, and now the former owners of the precious commodity were hightailing it empty-handed.
You bastards. The detonator. It's all about the detonator, isn't it? You bastards booby-trapped the cargo. Unless you want to get gut-stabbed and left behind, you better shut your yap. That backpack was part of my cargo. I bought the C4. I paid for it in advance.
In times past, possession was considered to be 9/10 of the law. Of course, the very idea of law is now relegated to the realm of myth and misunderstanding. And presently, none of us possesses anything more valuable than our own lives, which, I hasten to add, hang precariously in the balance.
That shit is mine!
Not the time to discuss who owns what. What's done is done. We can't get into the cage to disarm the booby trap. We need to get distance from here. A far distance.
The musician scowled, but finally shut his mouth. Ryan thought about the other folks in the store, the shoppers, not the sec men. There wasn't time to convince the innocent that they should abandon the building, and trying to do that would alert the guards and get everyone trapped inside. It would get everybody dead. The circumstance was unfortunate, but it was out of any of their control. The companions and the musician were forced to stop at the building's south exit. Boomty's sec man had set up a narrow barricaded passage with tables set out for the examination of merchandise. The penalty for shoplifting was the same as the penalty for pretty much everything, death. One of the sec men checked Ryan's chit. Noting the fact that they hadn't picked up any gear, he frowned.
Why are you leaving? We're too hungry to think. Be back after we eat. You gotta go around to the other door if you want back in. Show them your chit. Move along.
Beyond the exit door, they stepped into blazing sun and stifling heat. There was no cover ahead, just the wide, mud-encrusted expanse of the mall's south parking lot. Jack took point, walking fast. The musician glared at Ryan.
Do you have any rad-blasted idea what 10 kilos of C4 can do?
Rough idea.
Then why the hell aren't we running?
We're waiting until we're a little ways from the building. Don't want to raise suspicions and get ourselves machine-gunned from behind. Okay, Jack, that's far enough. Let's pour it on.
Jack immediately picked up the pace, his arms pumping, long white hair flying out straight behind him. The others raced after him. The sun hammered against Ryan's head and shoulders. The weight of his pack and rifle came down hard on their respective straps, rasping into his flesh on every footfall. Those at the rear of the file fanned out a bit to avoid the dust cloud raised by the runners in front. Chins up, eyes straight ahead. This was a grim, silent race against time. A race against their luck, finally running out. To Ryan, it felt like a gun muzzle was pressed hard to the back of his head, a live round chambered, and someone's finger curled around the trigger. Any second, the wave of destruction would come, a wave so hot it would scramble the nerves of back and brain, so hot it would feel cold, and then the black. Forever. The end of the parking lot and the line of trees at the edge of the golf course grew steadily closer. What was a safe distance? Ryan's thighs began to ache, his legs felt like lead. Sweat peeled down the sides of his face and trickled along the middle of his back. To his relief, they crossed the ruptured road and reached the start of the golf course. Ryan hazarded a glance back over his shoulder to measure the distance they'd come. He guessed it at a little more than 700 yards. Before he could face front again, it all went to hell. The relatively small explosion at the edge of the parking lot shot straight up in the air like a volcanic eruption. The other inside the box store volcanoed and went sideways in all directions. In a blinding flare of light, the store's concrete block walls vanished, and the Winnies disintegrated in the same microsecond. The explosion made the ground fly up and smash everyone in the face. One moment, Ryan was running, the next he was on his stomach, seeing stars and tasting his own coppery blood. He wasn't alone. He could see that everybody was flat on the ground. JB slowly curled around his arms, holding his side.
Oh, nuke in hell. I think I cracked a rib.
Slowly, they got to their feet and looked back the way they had come. Where the pre-dark mall had been, a vast column of roiling dust and smoke, uncoiled into the blue sky.
There's nothing left of it. It's all gone.
We're too exposed here. If anybody survived that, they may come gunning. Move out.
They move deeper into the golf course, out of eyeshot from the destruction, presuming there were any eyes left attached to live people. JB dropped behind it once, cradling his ribcage on the left side. Seeing how badly his old friend was banged up, Ryan quickly relieved him of his pack and hung back to walk with him. Jack led them up a familiar rise, through the grove of trees, and down the slope to the shore of the Chartreuse matted water hazard. At the edge of the lake, they all sat, exhausted. First thing, Mildred had a look at JB's ribs.
I heard something go snap when I hit the ground. It's hard to breathe deep.
You might have cracked one, or maybe it's just a deep bruise. Either way, all I can do is wrap you up to immobilize it.
She pulled a bandage roll from her medical kit and started binding his chest in tight overlapping turns. As she was working, the musician lifted his head from between his knees and addressed the one-eyed man.
Where's the rest of my C4?
Maybe you'd better explain how you figure it's yours before we get into whether there's any more of it.
I heard about a pre-dark C4 storage site from a scrounger who'd just come back from the New Mex hot zone. He didn't know what the fuck he'd stumbled onto. Triple Stoop couldn't read a lick. He thought the packaged kilos might be worth something, though. He came to me with the information and a sample of the stuff because he didn't trust Boom T to give him an honest deal. I hired a full bike crew to go back to New Mex with him. Took a big risk and staked them gas, food, and ammo to go get me a load of plastique. That's why I'm here with my ship. I skipper a 40-foot sloop, working the coast route up the Atlantic. I've been waiting to make the exchange for the explosive and then to personally deliver it to my buyers.
East Coast Barrens?
Nah, I'm not sailing east with it, I'm sailing west. You ever hear of Padre Island?
Rumors. Pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Grounded freighter fully loaded on the southwest edge of the Houston Rad Pit.
To be more precise, my dear, what we've heard is rumors of rumors. We've never actually made the acquaintance of anyone who claimed to have visited that particular garden spot. Only people who claimed to know people who claimed they knew people, and so on and so on. Smoke and mirrors, not to put too fine a point on it.
Well, I've been there regular, maybe 20 times total, and I'm telling you, it's as real as you and me. The islanders have brand new pre-dark goods coming out their ears. They're ready to trade plenty for something this extra special. Once they got it, they'll cut it up into little chunks and sell it for 10 times my price. But hey, that's business.
So if these people are paying you, you can pay us.
I'll give you just what I was going to give the cold hearts I hired. I paid them half up front, promised to pay them half on delivery. I'll give you the delivery part of what I agreed to.
That isn't good enough. We want half of whatever the islanders are going to pay you.
Are you kidding? You want me to make you partners?
Do I look like I'm kidding?
Without us, you've got nothing. And you're out all your upfront costs. With us, you've got 50 kilos of C4 to trade.
So there is more of it.
The musician rocked a little on his feet, a wide smile lifting the corners of his drooping lip shrubbery.
We need you, and you need us. That's what partnerships are made of.
All right. I'll admit you've got me.
We need ammo for our blasters. 9s, 38s, 357s, 9mm and 12-gauge.
Not a problem. I got a good selection of new, not reloaded, cartridges stowed away on my ship. It's Islanders' ammo from their stockpile. The bikers were going to take it as part of their pay. You can help yourselves.
And you're taking us with you to Padre.
Of course. We ship together until the deal is finished. Afterward, we go separate ways. Now, where's our C4?
By way of an answer, Ryan started unlacing his boots. Jack did the same. Then the two of them waded out into the lake to retrieve the sunken treasure. As they dropped 5 dripping packs onto the shore, the musician shook his head, his expression rueful.
Well, fuck me sideways and call me Sally.
Right. So what do people call you?
I answer to Tom, among other things. And before we head out, I've got to ask you something else. No matter what you tell me, it won't change anything that we've agreed on. After all, a deal's a deal. I just want to know. Did you chill those bikers to get the booty?
JB shot Tom a flinty look as he cleaned his glasses.
We ain't cold heart robbers.
And I'm supposed to know that from looking at you?
The bikers were already chilled when we found them. They got swarmed by stickies.
Son of a bitch. It's a triple nasty way to go.
We need to get a move on. Some of Boom T's sec men could have survived the explosion. When they look around, they're not going to be real happy with the way things turned out.
My ship's moored south of here.
Ryan and Jack got their boots back on, and everyone started picking up their gear. Though there were five extra 25-pound packs to lug, JB couldn't carry anything but his M4000, and he had stiffened up so much, he needed Mildred's help just to get to his feet.
Easy does it.
When she reached for her load of C4, their new business partner brushed away her hand.
Don't worry, I'll take it. You see to your friend there.
The pack of plastique felt cool against Ryan's back as its moisture soaked through his coat and shirt.
Okay, let's go. Eyes sharp.
They climbed out of the water hazard's bowl and set off down the slope, onto the flatland, past the cultivated fields. Ryan took the rear guard behind Mildred and JB. The sound of the explosion had awakened the field hands from their midday snoozes. Ryan saw them standing outside their shanties, 100 or more yards away, hands on hips or shielding their eyes from the sun, looking in the direction of the mall and the rising pillar of smoke. Beyond the south end of the golf course, the companion stepped back onto the gridwork of ruined and deserted city streets. Almost at once, a group of armed men appeared around a corner, running toward them from the direction of the gulf. The companion's hands instinctively started for their guns.
Easy now. They don't know what's happened. We're not gonna tell them. Keep walking nice and slow, like we're in no particular hurry.
That wasn't the case for the strangers. Ryan measured the opposition as they rapidly closed ground. A half dozen sec men carried Soviet-made assault rifles on shoulder slings, and five crusty sailors had the butts of their sidearms hooked over their waistbands. There was shock on all their faces, but they didn't go for their weapons. A sec man, a deeply tanned, bald-headed guy, stopped in front of Tom.
Tom, what the fuck happened over there?
Damned if I know. We just left the Emporium, heading for my ship, and there was a giant explosion at our backs. Fuck awful blast. Never seen the like. Don't know what the hell Boom T had squirreled away, but I'm telling you, it all went up in a single go. We were 3/4 of a mile away, and it still nearly chilled us.
Oh, what about other survivors, wounded?
We didn't see anybody. Fires were burning red hot, and there was too much smoke. Don't see how anyone could have lived through it, though.
We gotta find out for sure. Some of our crew might have made it. They might be hurt. Come back with us and help wreck.
There's no point. There's nothing up there but ashes. It'll take 3 days for them to cool down enough so you can start sifting through them. I'm not sticking around for that. I'm leaving Port Aville on this tide. You've seen the last of me.
Well, fuck you then! Come on, men, we gotta go!
I wish you luck.
The companions watched the would-be rescuers hurry off. The sec men and sailors didn't cut through the golf course, but took the street route, which was faster.
Well, that makes things a whole lot easier. Those were Boom T's harbor guards. They could have made things dicey. Now there's nothing to stop us from sailing off into the sunset.
Standing water started at the railroad tracks, which divided Port Aville roughly in two, lengthwise. They sloshed through ankle-deep black brine. There was no way around it. The rise in sea level had inundated Big Hill Reservoir and the associated holding ponds. At closer range, the oil refinery was even more of a decrepit shambles. Cracking towers canted at odd angles, gangways ending in space, an iridescent marsh of spilled oil. The reek of sulfur was like a snap kick in the solar plexus. Ahead of them, beyond the swamped and decaying downtown, Ryan could see huge engine-powered ships, rusting hulks of tugs and tankers listing on their sides in the shallows. Violent storms had driven them up onto the city streets and left them wedged there. Tom stepped up near Ryan.
Best you all follow me from here on. I know the route the mule carts take.
He led them through the water to the concrete ramp where the carts were offloaded and loaded. The top of the ramp was connected to a system of crude floating docks. Big blocks of oil-stained closed-cell plastic foam and sealed, empty 55-gallon drums supporting scrap lumber planks lay side by side. The pathway floated alongside the drowned buildings, past the ruined ships, and then cut a straight line across the deep, pre-dark channel to the sailboats tied up at the bases of the cargo cranes. The dock moved under their weight, bobbing, undulating like the body of a giant, muty snake. At the tail end of the line, the motion was the most extreme. Ryan had to concentrate on every step and anticipate the rolling rise and fall. As they negotiated the final unprotected stretch of the walkway, a bullet whined past Ryan's head and slapped into the water in front of him on the right. The wake of the near-miss rifle round brushed the side of his neck, and a chill ran down his spine to the soles of his feet.
Shit!
When Boom T pushed the little red firing switch, he was expecting a loud and satisfying result. He wasn't expecting a cataclysm, or to black out from the explosion's pressure wave. The entrepreneur came to after a split second of oblivion, his head reeling. He couldn't tell there had been two explosions, they had come too close together, and his ears had been instantly overloaded. Now it felt like wads of cotton had been rammed into them. He tasted blood on his lips. It was leaking out of his nostrils in a steady trickle. Because he had taken cover behind the overturned semi-trailer, he couldn't immediately see what had happened to his world. Even so, he realized that the blast was exponentially bigger than he had planned. It had not only ripped the steel sheathing from the top side of the trailer, leaving bare the skeleton of the frame, it had lifted and scooted the massive rig 6 feet across the sidewalk, which in turn pushed the golf cart with him on it. The sec man hunkered around him looked stunned too. They were bleeding from their noses and ears. Though his mind was clearing, Boom T couldn't seem to make his limbs obey him. A choking pall of dust and smoke swept over the trailer. There was a lot more of both than he had anticipated. Boom T managed to climb into the golf cart. Accelerator pedal floored, head lowered, he sped off, following the sidewalk south. His sec man ran after him. Until he circled out of the choking dust plume, he had no idea what had happened, what he had in fact done. As he took in his former domain, he couldn't recognize it. It took a moment for the truth to sink in. Sure enough, there was a crater big enough for a swimming pool. That vacant hole, still belching smoke, was his entire net worth. Everything Boom T had worked and fought for his whole life, his magnificent edifice to post-apocalyptic commerce, its stock of previously owned merchandise, the contents of his treasure room, his devoted sec crew, his gaudy, his assemblage of willing if less than appetizing whores, was obliterated. In its place was more fire and more smoke than he had ever seen. Towering flames danced behind the shifting wall of dust. The vast, roiling smoke column had risen 1,000 feet in the air and was still climbing. Worst of all, the direct connection between the excavation of the swimming pool and his total ruination was impossible to ignore. Boom T had been hornswoggled into pushing the button that had brought his empire to an end. He'd been fucked in a way that Deathland's legends were made of. Legends that never died. One of the sec men gestured toward the end of the south parking lot.
Look over there! Rat blazes! Somebody made it out alive!
The entrepreneur stomped on the brakes, grabbed up a pair of binoculars from the seat next to him, and peered through the optics. Better than a mile away, a handful of people stood on the edge of the golf course, staring back at the destruction. Even at that distance, Boom T could make out what looked like a black eye patch on one of them. The red-haired slut and the sawed-off little turd in the fedora were much easier to see. There was no mistaking who it was, or who had engineered his demise.
One eye.
Even as he watched, Ryan and his crew turned tail and vanished into the trees. It was too late for Boom T's sec man to bracket them with gunfire, but he knew where One Eye was heading. In that direction, there was only one place to go. What Trader had done to him so many years ago had been bad, so bad that the story of his hosing still circulated, still tainted his reputation. But this was a defeat of an entirely different order of magnitude. This was a total wipeout.
What the hell made him do it?
Boom T racked his brain for an answer that made sense. There was no material gain for Carter that he could see. One Eye hadn't plundered the treasure room. If he tried, the guards posted there would have responded with bullets, and a major firefight would have ensued. A fat man had come away holding the shitty end of the stick in his final deal with Trader, so there was no reason for One Eye to risk his life and the lives of his crew to get payback. If there was payback due, it was Boom T's to collect. His mention of Trader's death had been a test. He had held back critical details of the story to try to find out what Carter knew. For years, Boom-T had been spreading rumors about being in the room with Trader in his last helpless moments, sometimes implying that he had hastened the legend's departure with his own two butt cheeks. The tales were complete fabrications, of course. They were intended to restore his lost status and prestige. And since Trader had disappeared without a trace, there was no one to question him on the facts. Unfortunately, there was no one to refute them either, which was something that hadn't occurred to him until now. It also occurred to Boom-T that he had been punished for the crime of running off his mouth, and the punishment meted out was inconceivable. His Sekhmen stood nearby, with sweat streaking the soot that covered their faces. The whites of their eyes were scoured pink from dust and ash. Boom-T was down to 5 soldiers. Carter had 6. An even match, except in firepower. His Sek crew was armed with automatic weapons and extra mags.
The scum who did this to us are headed for the water. But no way are they getting away with this. We are going to stop them from sailing out of here, no matter what it takes. Now follow me.
Boom-T accelerated away, and his Sek men fell in line behind. He kept his speed down, fearing his escort would either fall too far back to be of any use, or faint dead away from exertion and the sweltering heat. His own massive sweat-looped buttocks were sliding around on the vinyl bench seat. Even though he was driving parallel to the golf course, he couldn't see the opposition. That was a good thing. If he couldn't see Carter, chances were that Carter couldn't see him. Boom-T already had a plan in place to stop an attempted escape by sea, a plan he had devised after the trader deal had gone bad. Because of the sunken tankers at the upper end of the Port Avil moorage, the only way in, from the south, was also the only way out for deep-keel vessels. That meant that exit and entry could be blocked off in a matter of minutes, keeping robbers and cheats from reaching the open gulf, and stopping would-be pirates from invading the moorage. He was 2/3 of the way past the golf course when he saw a column of Sekhmen and a few sailors running his way. The new men were visibly relieved to find their boss still alive. Boom-T was less sanguine about seeing their faces.
Why'd you desert your post?
To help with the rescue. We thought you'd need help to get out the wounded.
We're all that's left! There's no one else to rescue, goddammit! Everybody was blown to bits! The Emporium's gone, too. Hell, the whole goddamn mall is gone!
The Sekhmen stared at the news, their jaws hanging open.
Did you see a man with an eye patch? Stumpy little shit was with him and a tall slut with red hair.
Yeah, we passed him on the way up. 6 strangers and Captain Tom was with him.
But they were the ones who did it, you fucking drollers! They destroyed everything we had and you let them go!
Blood drained from the Sekhmen's faces. They backed away.
Oh, for fuck's sake! We got him outnumbered. We can still stop him from escaping. You sailors are coming along too now. If you don't help us win this fight, I'm going to sail your ships out into the Gulf and scuttle them. Now get moving!
The 16 men followed behind him at a trot. Minutes later, he caught sight of their quarry. One Eye and his crew were about 500 yards ahead, just crossing the railroad tracks, starting to slog through the black water toward downtown. Picking up the binocs, the fat man counted 7, not 6 opponents. Captain Tom was indeed among them. In point of fact, the traitorous traitor was heading the Nuken parade, and apparently not at gunpoint. Boom-T watched him lead Carter and Pipsqueak and the others up the ramp and onto the floating dock. When they disappeared between the half-submerged buildings, it was time to act.
We gotta close on them before they get underway.
Boom-T pointed to his 4 quickest and strongest surviving lackeys.
You and you! Beat feet down to the skiff, loaded with the harbor net, string it across the entrance. Don't engage the bastards, don't return fire. Just lay the barrier net and then find positions on the crane side to defend it. If we can seal them in, we got them. We can take our own sweet time with the chilling.
The quartet shoulder slung their AKs and ran toward the water in the direction of the harbor mouth.
Rest here, come with me.
When the heavily loaded golf cart bumped over the railroad tracks and splashed into the brackish water, Boom-T once again hit the brakes. The vehicle had tiny wheels. If he went any farther, the water level would rise to reach the motor and batteries and short everything out. Cinching up his bedspread toga, the fat man unclipped an RPG from the canopy frame. It was the kill shot, the ship sinker. It looked like a child's toy in his huge hands. Boom-T slid off the seat into the warm, shallow water. He sloshed toward downtown, and his Sekhmen and the sailors trailed in his foaming wake. The fat man waded knee-deep between red brick buildings, then mounted the concrete ramp to the floating dock.
We are gonna lower the odds.
He picked the two best shots from among the survivors.
You two, get up on the rooftops. Hold your fire until they're on the open stretch of dock. Then you got nowhere to go except in the water. Take out as many as you can. Pin down the rest. We'll do the mop up.
The snipers ran ahead down the dock, alongside the drowned buildings. Boom-T waved the rest of the men ahead. It irked him, but he had no choice. If he went first, he'd slow down the advance. Not only would 500 pounds of running weight overstress the dock's salvaged planking, it would create a rocking motion so violent that it would make standing difficult and accurate aiming impossible. When his crew was 40 yards distant, Boom-T set out after them, taking care where and how heavily he stepped, steadying himself with a hand against the building's sides. Even so, the dock lurched sickeningly under him. Fat Man hurried, his arms extended like a tightrope walker to catch up to his main force, which had already reached the start of the unprotected section of dock. The undulation became so extreme that to keep from falling in the water, he dropped to his hands and knees and madly crawled the last 10 yards. To the right, he could see four men in a small skiff, two rowing for all they were worth, two frantically pushing a folded, weighted net over the stern. They were halfway across the harbor mouth. 200 yards away, One Eye was scrambling aboard a moored sailing ship. The vessel lay broadside to Boom-T, across the open stretch of water, a sitting target. The fat man shouldered the RPG. Because of the dock's movement, he couldn't keep the ship in his sights. He had to hold fire. He couldn't waste the shot.
Don't get him, you shit! Don't let him cast off!
Ryan broke into an all-out sprint as rifle shots rained down on the exposed dock. Bullets zinged over his head, splintering the 30-foot stretch of planking that separated him from Jack. The companions knew better than to bunch up while crossing open space. The up-and-down, wave-like movement of the dock both helped and hurt the companions' cause. It messed up the sniper's stationary leads, but the tricky footing meant it took longer to reach hard cover. Ryan couldn't stop, turn, locate the targets, and return fire with the Steyr to put up cover for his battlemates. Headlong forward motion was all that was keeping them from being hit, and even that wasn't enough. Directly in front of him, Jack's C4 backpack took a solid whack, jerking sideways on its back straps. The slug drilled through and left to right into the water, missing the albino's ribcage by a fraction of an inch. The impact caught him in mid-stride and knocked him off balance, driving him to a knee. Unhurt, unfazed, Jack bounced back up at once and ran on. 100 feet away, the far end of the dock was tied to the partially sunken base of the Big Arthur crane. Ryan saw Tom lead Christy, Mildred, JP, and Doc onto the crane deck, then to the right, behind the cover of the moored sailboats. 5 ships blocked the sniper fire. Ryan and Jack raced to close ranks, bullets dogging their heels. As they jumped onto the crane and ran behind the stern of the first ship, a flurry of slugs plowed into the hull and ricocheted off the steel masts. All along the moorage, the liveaboard crews of the trader vessels dived for cover. A tall string bean of a sailor stood at precisely the wrong moment. A shot intended for Ryan sent him headfirst over the port rail backward into the gap between the ship and the crane's base. Captain Tom cupped his hands around his mouth.
Keep the fuck down!
He stopped beside an off-white sloop with an oil and chem-stained hull and battered steel masts. As Ryan and Jack ran low and fast toward him, Tom hurried Christy, Mildred, Doc, and JB aboard the amidships gangway, guiding them down into the cockpit and out of sight below decks. Ryan couldn't miss the ship's name painted in peeling cursive letters across the stern. Tempest. Bolted to the top of the stainless steel stern rail was a canvas-shrouded long gun on a swivel mount. It had a massive box magazine, but shooting back wasn't what was on Tom's mind.
Cast off the line!
Ryan whipped out his Panga and slashed through the 2-inch braid on the crane cleat with 3 hacking blows. As the ship's engine engaged, gray smoke puffed from exhaust ports just above the waterline. From the bow cleat, Jack waved at Ryan.
Rifle, up here, quick!
Ryan dropped the end of the severed line, Sheathing his panga as he ran, he unslung the Steyr. Kneeling next to Jack, looking under and around the bowsprit, he saw a rowboat crossing the harbor mouth about 100 yards away. The seated men at the oars were working in unison and stroking hard. Two others stood bent over the stern, dumping a barrier net over the side. Judging from the floats bobbing on the surface, they had already blocked more than half the entrance. Brian tossed his backpacks onto the sailboat's foredeck. Then scrambled over the rail himself as Tom put the engine in gear and the ship started to slide away from the moorage. As the gangway glided past, Jack jumped the widening gap onto the port deck and scrambled into the cockpit. Ryan flipped up his scope's lens covers as he moved behind the skimpy cover of the anchor chain locker. Clear of the other trader ships, but still broadside to incoming fire, Tom redlined the diesel and the vessel surged forward. Ryan lined up his shot on the closer rower. Holding the center post low, he tightened down on the trigger. After a last-second adjustment of his lead, he applied an ounce more pressure. Downrange, the rower was struck center body mass as he leaned into a backstroke. He kept on going backward, losing his grip on the oar. Ryan cycled the action, fingering a fresh round. They were closing fast on the rowboat. Peering through the scope, he saw the other rower frozen on the thwart, staring down at its dying comrade. Ryan held the sight post, lower still. Struck high in the belly, the second rower twisted sideways and was thrown half over the far gunwale. Two men in the stern stood stunned, net in hands, as their boat rapidly lost momentum. Ryan glanced back when he felt the ship veer to the right. He saw Tom's head hooking over the ship's wheel. The captain had altered course, intending to ram. The men in the skiff dropped the net. Pushing their wounded comrades out of the way, they grabbed for the oars and tried to row back the way they'd come. By then, the bow of the trader vessel was bearing down hard. Realizing that they couldn't get away, they dumped the oars and reached for their AKs. Before they could get in position to do that, Ryan abandoned his rifle and raced to the starboard rail. Drawing his SIG, he leaned over the side, aimed down, and rapid-fired, shooting them to hell right where they sat. As the stern scraped past the dead boat and dead crew, Ryan gathered up his rifle and hopped down into the steel plate-lined cockpit. Bullets were still coming at them, but the ship was back end first to the enemy gunfire, and therefore a much smaller target. When Ryan raised up his head and looked back toward the dock, he saw a flash of ignition. He recognized at once what it was from the madly spiraling smoke trail, a rocket-propelled grenade.
Tom! Grenade!
Before the captain could cut the wheel hard over, the grenade whooshed past them, wide to the right. The rocket skipped on the surface of the water once like a flat rock, crow-hopped another 150 feet in the air. Ryan climbed out of the rear of the cockpit and shouldered the Steyr, using the top of the stern rail as a shooting brace. Through the eyepiece, he saw the fat man in the middle of the dock, his tree trunk legs wide apart for balance, still holding the RPG launcher, waving and shouting for his men to keep firing.
What in rad blazes are you doing? They can't touch us. We're home free.
Ryan didn't answer. He held his sights steady and tightened down, doing his best to time the trigger break with the rise and fall of the distant dock. 3 seconds later, through the scope, he saw Boom T's head suddenly snap back, his chins pointing skyward, his arms flung wide. The gargantuan entrepreneur toppled over backward, spread-eagled, off the dock and into the water, with a tremendous splash.
Nuke in hell. That's what I call a shot.
Dumb luck.
Call it whatever you want, but I'd like to see the fat, cheating bastard get up from that one.